Hey you, it's me, Lucky Damn Day, and this is my podcast, Lucky's Really Long List of Movies, and I just want to jump in here real quick before we start the show, just to give you a little bit of a technical difficulty disclaimer. While me and my very special guest were recording this episode, we did run into a few technical difficulties. Some microphones went out. Sometimes you'll hear some weird sounds coming through because my guest recorded it on their end. I recorded this on my end. And we both were wearing headphones, and sometimes you can hear the headphones feedback into the mic. So you're not going crazy. You're not hearing voices because you are hearing voices. You're hearing our voices. So I'm sorry for that. And then also, my very special guest is my sibling, and I get very excited when I talk to my sibling, and I'm not a very good interviewer. And if it sounds like I'm talking over them and all this, it's because I am. It's because I am 100%. And I was also having issues with like transition sounds, so you're gonna hear the wind chimes a lot. And I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. I needed a transition sound and I just had to work with what I had. So without further ado, enjoy the show, and I'm sorry for all the technical difficulties. Love you! It's Lucky's Really Long List of Movies. Oh my goodness. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Lucky's Really Long List of Movies, where I, your host, Lucky Damn Day, will tackle my list of movies I have never seen. Some of the movies are recommended, some of the movies are well known, some of the movies are hidden in the deep, dark depths of the internet. And this month's theme is movies that make people scream at me because I haven't seen the movie. And this week's movie is the one, the only, The Matrix. And for this episode, I have brought on a special guest. Oh, yeah, I am legit now because I have a guest. And this guest is very special to me, very important to me. This is a family member of mine, a fellow queer, a fellow movie fanatic. Please put your hands and clams together for Casey Phipps! Casey, would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Well, I think you already did that. My name's Casey Phipps. My pronouns are they, them. I have no accomplishments or personality of any kind. So I think we should just jump right into the movie. Movies are my substitute for a personality, and I'm excited to talk about The Matrix.
All right, so the first topic of our major topic, The Matrix. I really want to start with talking about 1999. This is when the movie came out, and that was
a long time ago.
But not that long, though. Back in 1999, I really want to talk about the culture, the pop culture. What were young people doing? What were the teens doing? Basically, the people that went to go see The Matrix. I think that young people and teens, or families in general, they were able to introduce a lot more technology into their day-to-day lives. Like in 1999, it was a lot more common to have laptops, a family computer. The internet was like out in the home. Because, you know, like in the 80s, if you had a cell phone or a computer, you were like a rich bitch, basically.
Right. Or a nerd. Or a fucking nerd. Like a computer was just a TI-83. Like the same kind of person who owned a computer owned a Texas Instruments graphing calculator.
You know? Wow. You sound like a nerd just saying that.
Well, I owned a computer, so.
Well, I'm glad you confessed now. Again, like, yeah, like the technology is being introduced into the home. We have DVDs. Right. We have CDs. So you're able to walk around with like CDs, and you can listen to your music while you're skateboarding.
You can throw them at people. You just
throw them
like ninja stars. We had these AOL CDs. Do you remember those? Like AOL was the internet. I don't know how you got on the internet without AOL, but they would send you a CD. They would send everybody on the planet a CD every week, and then they would just collect in your house like dust bunnies.
Yeah, I definitely remember all of those like AOL CDs. Like they were almost like everywhere in the house. They were in everyone's house.
Yeah, it was an infestation.
Everyone's getting used to the internet. Everyone's getting familiar with technology. Everyone's getting familiar with like terminology around technology.
Yeah, so
it's becoming like easier to understand.
Right. It didn't even have like a name yet. Nobody knew what to call it. So like we call it the internet now. But
right.
There were all these names. We're like, no, it's not the internet. That's too clunky. You got to call it the net. Or it'd be like, no, you got to call it the World Wide Web. Or you got to call it cyberspace.
Cyberspace. That's a fun one. I kind of wish we still called it cyberspace.
I know.
That'd be fun. Anytime I talk about the internet or about how the internet just came out, I'm just like constantly reminded that I'm like older than the internet, which feels crazy.
Yeah, isn't it? It is pretty crazy that you and I existed before the internet. It's like existing before electricity. That that we were born in the 20th century.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy. We're in the 21st century now. We're relics that should not still be here.
Also, in 1999, around this era, this starts to relate to the Matrix a little bit, is AI defeating chess champions in 1999.
Right.
So the introduction of AI has already been introduced to the public.
Right.
Speaking of technology and this movie, before I watched it, I was like, I don't know how the graphics are going to age with this movie because it came out in 1999. I just watched it literally March of 2024. The CGI was still really fucking good.
Yeah.
It was still very good.
Yeah. I mean, was it good because of the CGI or was it good because of the lack of CGI?
I think it was really well balanced between CGI and practical effects. Because just as much as they use CGI, which was a lot, they also used a lot of practical effects as well. Like they, like, it's like, yeah, a lot of it was like green screen, but a lot of it was like also real movie sets and the guns, all the fucking guns in this movie, they would actually fire off and spark and pop and
actually killed scores of people. You know, it's,
exactly.
It was
that was
worth
the
night
that was before the unions.
Yeah. In the next movies, you know, that came out later, which I guess you haven't seen yet. You know, the Matrix was big by this point. It was a cultural phenomenon.
Massive.
And so they had all this money to make the sequels, and they kind of look like shit compared to compared to the original. Everything looks plasticky and rubbery and shiny. It just looks like computer generated bullshit. But as opposed to like the original Matrix, like that's that famous scene where he's bending backwards and the bullets are like flowing over him. They made like this room of cameras that could take pictures of him. And if they had to recreate that same shot with the amount of money and resources they had for the second and third movie, they would have just put it into a computer rather than construct this new invention. And you can really feel that difference.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the bullet time camera. That was a whole new piece of technology that was made specifically just for this movie. And then after the success of The Matrix, which rang in around $46 million, you know, no big deal. Rung in $460 million.
Oh. See, you said both of those, and both of them sound the same to me. Anything over about $300, I'm like, wow, good for them. I mean, don't movies make, like, how much money does, like, some bullshit Marvel movie make now? What's the one that they turned into a meme? Morbius? Whatever that was? Morbius?
You're making that up.
I don't think so. No, Morbius.
<What is that? laughs> Morbius?
All right, so you don't know what Morbius is. I want you to tell me right now, who is Morbius?
What's his
superpowers?
Okay, I'll tell you how the Morbius movie starts out. It's a golden retriever, and he's trotting down the street. and he has a really fun bandana around his neck. And then all of a sudden, a bunch of yogurt spills out of a truck in the middle of a street that he's trotting down. And then an entire wave of yogurt arches over Morbius, the golden retriever. And then it's freeze frame. It stops. Everything stops. And then he goes, "Hi, my name's Morbius. Well, this is my life." And then it just like breaks into like a guitar song. And it's all about Morbius, the dog who has to save maybe like a few children from cancer. Am I close?
From cancer?
Yeah. Ever heard of it?
But
yeah.
But what, how do his superpowers help a few children with cancer? But the yogurts give him
what,
some
what can he
superpower,
not do?
Right? Some kind of cancer fighting superpower?
Yes, I would say that the yogurt is actually full of probiotics and some nuclear elements as well. Uh-huh. And when they soak the dog takes it, you know, like it's kind of like a, he absorbs it through his skin. So if you pet him, you get better.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this does sound sound like a poor performing movie. This one I don't have as much faith in. Also, so like he was named Morbius before the radioactive yogurt, like his owners named him Morbius instead of like Max or something.
His owners are like a little pretentious.
Gotcha. Morbius.
Yeah.
The friendly golden retriever who fights some cancer. Yeah, okay.
And I'm coming into the Matrix right off the heels of Parasite.
Oh.
If anything, this entire podcast makes me feel like I'm unpacking a matrix of my own. Like, I feel like I'm just taking in so much information, so much perspective. I'm just like, oh, my God. And I'm watching so many thought-provoking movies this month. Next month is just going to be pure trash, and I cannot fucking wait. I need a break.
Yeah.
But this month, it's like a lot of critically acclaimed movies, and I'm just like, oh, God. And just like watching Parasite, I'm just like, what the fuck? And then I'm watching The Matrix, and I'm just like, for fuck's sake. And like... and next I'm going to be doing the
And
God
you're listening
Father.
To Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, I'm listening to Rage Against the fucking
Come
Machine.
Come on.
That's just a therapeutic thing to do, is just yell, come on, like Rage Against the Machine.
I mean, that's all their music is just therapeutic screaming.
And it's screaming about...
It's not even screaming. It's just like... It's like a therapeutic belch.
Yeah.
You know? It's like...
Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Oh, God, that just feels
Fuck you,
good.
I won't do what you tell me. Doesn't it make you want to beat the shit out of somebody?
Yeah, it makes me just want to, like, fight for my rights or something. It's really nice. Bring back Blockbuster!
Bring back Blockbuster.
I would love Blockbuster to come back. Oh, yeah, 1999. There was Blockbuster. Before we take a deep dive into Blockbuster, we gotta take a break for our super serious sponsor. That's right, we have ad breaks now because I told you I'm legit now. So enjoy this very legit commercial.
This summer, he's fluffy, has a cute bandana, and he's covered in radioactive yogurt. And he can cure some cancers in children. From the makers of Gak and Goo, it's Morbius, the friendly radioactive golden retriever, coming to a theater near you. And then straight to streaming.
And we're back. Anyway, and I really liked the whole Blockbuster store experience. You could go in there and get a couple of movies, couple of video games, popcorn, candy, even like a poster or two. Like people would rent like 3 to 4 movies at a time and they would go and watch like fucking all of them. And then also the movies that you would end up with because you had to settle because your first pick wasn't there.
Yeah. And also the person behind the counter was always a movie guru.
Oh, yeah.
And would be able to tell you everything about any movie that you brought up.
You go in there, you're like looking for a fix and you don't know what you're looking for. You just tell them what you're feeling in the moment. You're like, these are my thoughts and feelings right now. I don't know where to go from here. And then they're like, oh, well, you can do this or that.
In my fantasy memory, I'm imagining a Blockbuster employee, like a face full of piercings, like a
piercings and pimples,
like a and like a mustache that is kind of ill defined and really shouldn't be there, and no uniform, because I don't remember a Blockbuster ever being supervised. I don't think there was any management. It was just the person behind the counter. It's like stumbling across a magical shop that's not supposed to exist.
So going back to the topic of making the movie,
The Matrix.
I want to talk about the bullet time camera just one more time. So the bullet time camera, it looks like this massive rig that is in a giant circle, but it's actually like a it's on like a type of rig that can actually be serpentined and stretched out, and like it's just like a string with cameras that can make a lot of shapes that can surround anything. Yeah, like it can go in a spiral. It can go like in an S formation, like a serpentine formation. It can go in a circle. It can like just depending on like how you want the shot to be taken. I watched a video of this guy talking about the bullet time camera and about how it's made, and like, holy shit, I could not comprehend anything he was saying, but it was just a bunch of cameras in a circle and they all fire off at the same time. So we get that beautiful surrounded shot, and it gives it like that slow motion effect, but also you can see everything in space and time, which is really fucking cool. They made it for The Matrix after The Matrix came out, and it was such a big fucking hit. I think it was Warner Brothers that like immediately patented the bullet time camera. And so now the bullet time camera is like used for like a lot of other things too. A good example of the of a bullet time shot is the iconic the bullets. Like Keanu Reeves is bending over backwards, defying gravity, and he's like dodging all these bullets. That was one of the bullet time shots when Neo is fighting Agent Smith in the subway. That was also bullet time as well.
Wait, what shot was that? That was bullet time?
The bullet time
in the subway?
The bullet time shot in the subway is when they're jumping in the air and they're pointing guns at each other. And
Right.
That's a bullet time shot. And
I guess another bullet time shot was right at the beginning, right? With Trinity.
Yes!
She's doing the mantis kick in the air, like just like a minute in.
Beautiful. And speaking of beauty, something that Lana Wachowski, the one of the directors of the movie, she does talk about like aesthetics and about how movies kind of like dropped off aesthetics for a moment. And with The Matrix, that's something that they wanted to bring back was just like aesthetics and making a beautiful looking movie. So maybe that went into like some consideration of just like,
really? That's interesting that movies stopped caring about visuals.
Yeah, it's kind of a broad statement. So maybe it wasn't like all movies, but you know, The Matrix definitely brought in some really refreshing visuals.
I just love the whole aesthetic of The Matrix universe. Like it has its own vibe and feel. Like if you were to make The Matrix today, if somebody had this idea today and it had never been done before and they made a movie out of it, it would look just like everything else that is in the movie theater. But like the way everything looks like it's made out of garbage is really cool, and it all looks like a 90s computer that you've taken the shell off of, and it's just guts, just mechanical digital guts, and it's all dirty, and it feels like a resistance that's outside the Matrix, and then inside the Matrix also has its own vibe. The black trench coats and the sunglasses, the slick back hair, like nothing else feels that way, you know?
And this aesthetic had people by the fucking throats. Like when it came out, I think it really helped us walk into the millennium. Yeah, as you said, like the vibe of The Matrix and then the vibe of the real world, they're a little different but very specific. I think about that scene. It's like, again, I'm still talking about like the first half of the movie. I swear to God, I've seen the entire movie. But like the first half of the movie when Mr. Anderson is in the office of his boss because he woke up late, and the boss is like, all right, Mr. Anderson, you either show up on time or we can't pay you.
Right.
Even then, it's like really high contrast. It's really cool toned, really, really lightly blit, but also lightly blit. Brightly lit. Wow. And there's like a lot of like cool tones, blue tones, and just like high contrast, which
reminds me of how I would edit my MySpace pictures. They all looked like that. And what about all that like techie looking coding?
That's worth mentioning is that the actual code that falls from the top of the screen like rain, that is so aesthetically perfect that,
yes,
you know, like in back then in the 90s, computers, you would have to open up MS-DOS, which would just be that black screen with a green cursor. And now, since the Matrix, like you can't use the colors black and green on their own anymore. You can't look at those two colors together and not go Matrix in your brain. And
yeah, it's like this phantom green on a black background, yeah, specifically.
Yeah, that's just really cool.
So we're still in the beginnings of it. It's still being shot. And the actors, Keanu Reeves, Carrie Ann Moss, Lawrence Fishburne, they all went into kung fu training about 4 to 6 months before the movie. They had full kung fu training. Mm-hmm. And they also did basically all the stunts by themselves which was crazy and cool. And I know that the Matrix, there's like a lot of wire work, like a lot of people are being hoisted up and flung all over the place. I was actually watching a behind the scenes clip of Carrie Ann Moss and Keanu Reeves during that scene where they're walking into that building and they go through security with just bags and bags of guns. The guns just like make me laugh because I'm just like, it's the Matrix. You should be able to like bend and use reality at your will. But I guess, you know, Keanu was like still in training. So, of course, bring in the bags of AK-47s. So when they're in that lobby and they're like shooting up the place, there's like cement flying. The pillars are exploding everywhere and like all this stuff. And during that scene, Carrie Ann Moss has to like run up the side of a wall. And once she gets to the top, has to do like a backflip, land on her feet and fire her gun. Actually, during the making of that scene, she actually really fucked up her ankle. Like she fucked it up and it took 4 months to heal.
Really?
But she still powered through and did it. And this was also her very first movie she ever did.
Really?
Yeah, she used to be a...
Was her first movie?
This was her first ever movie. And also, it paid her jack shit. It paid her shit. She hardly got paid. And she's like, well, I would have done it for free. They know that. And after the movie was made, she was like contemplating, like she was like preparing to be a waitress again because she had like no money. But then, you know, luckily the movie came out and she became a part of like a franchise and she's branched out and done like all these like really cool things. But yeah. But anyway, back to the kung fu. They all had to go through and do kung fu training. And when they're fighting on set, they have like an entire kung fu team. So they're doing kung fu and they're also attached to wires and doing kung fu in the fucking air. And it's like also that is choreography. That is so much choreography to learn. And the best part about it is it's Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu fucking Reeves fighting fucking kung fu in the fucking air. It's amazing. And Carrie Ann Moss fucking kills it. Hey, hi there. It's Lucky from the future. And I'm sitting here and I'm editing this. And I just wanted to pop in here and let you know that Casey's mic cut out. So they did share my excitement in this little bit. They thought it was really cool that all that was going on in the movie. So I just want to let you know I wasn't just yelling at my sibling and they're just sitting there in silence waiting for me to finish. That's how it usually is. But in this specific moment, they shared the excitement. Okay, thank you so much. I'm going to let you get back to the episode. Thank you so much for holding on. I know it's a really hard episode to listen to because of all of the errors, but thank you so much. Love you. Now I want to talk a little bit about the PR for The Matrix, the advertising for The Matrix, the public even finding out that The Matrix is a movie.
Mm.
Like, we talked a little bit about The Matrix before, and you talked a little bit about the advertising for the movie, like, what is thematrix.com, and there's posters everywhere of, like, what is thematrix.com,
yeah.
The movie was coming out, people really didn't know what it was, people didn't know what The Matrix was. You had to go to, like, www.whatisthematrix.com and then the website will ask you for a password and then you have to type in the word steak and then like it just like pulls up this website.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it was. I'm trying to remember. I do remember that everything back then was www. You had to say it every single time.
Yeah.
You had as if it was a legally binding prefix. Like yeah, so you would have to go to www.whatisthematrix.com.
Mm-hmm.
And like the marketing campaign for this is as much the movie as the movie itself. Like the movie experience started in the weeks leading up to the premiere.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a viral marketing campaign that advertised through like little tiny mysteries here and there. And it got a lot of people talking and asking, what the fuck is this? What is the Matrix thing that I'm seeing everywhere? This question that's being posted. And then when you went to whatisthematrix.com, it didn't give you any information. Like if you went to any movie coming out right now, mm-hmm. and just went to their website, you would see the poster and you would see a synopsis and you would see a trailer that gives away most of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But when you went to whatisthematrix.com, it showed you something that was even more confusing. And so a lot of people were hyped up just wanting to know, okay, what is this thing? What is this movie that no one wants to show us? And so when you went into the movie, I think the most you kind of knew was, it's a movie about a guy who works in a corporate office and maybe there's guns involved. You know, maybe it's like a lethal weapon kind of thing, mm-hmm. but in a corporate office. Like what was that movie with Angelina Jolie where they would spin the bullets as they shot the gun?
I don't remember.
That's probably, yeah, it's okay. You don't need to, but no one does. That's probably the most people expected from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So they go into the movie with, at best, a wrong expectation and most likely no expectation.
Yeah.
And then from there, you're just constantly, you know, from the moment Trinity does her 360-degree mantis kick,
mm-hmm.
and gets sucked into a telephone, and then you don't see that again for a while. Then you go to just this software programmer in his life, and you kind of forget about whatever the intro was. And then you just keep asking this question, what the fuck is this? What am I watching?
Yeah.
And it just builds and builds and builds to the big moment where Neo wakes up in the Matrix. You realize what's going on. The question is finally answered, what the Matrix is, and it melted people's brains.
Mm-hmm. So now I want to talk about 1999 in regards to The Matrix. So 1999 was a year where we are yet again preparing for the end of the world. And I'm talking about Y2K.
For our younger listeners out there,
in 1999, there was a lot of like widespread panic about computers and their ability to compute that the year has now changed. We are now going into the millennium. They thought that there was going to be a lot of like shutdown and that all of these computer systems that we rely so heavily on could just crash as soon as the year changes. You can still look them up to this day. There are a lot of commercials and a lot of infomercials about buying Y2K doomsday kits of like canned food, candles, how to start a fire, mm-hmm. a radio, flashlights. Yep. In The Matrix, they say that 1999 was the last year, or it was like the peak year of civilization. But because of the introduction of AI, which did happen in 1999, AI actually took over civilization and turned people into like gross little batteries.
Ew,
gross. Duracell, gross.
What if we made a Duracell out of meat? Ew.
Gross.
Out of deli meat. Like a salami battery. Ew.
Yuck.
Thanks a lot, AI.
So the Matrix itself was like really talking to the people of 1999 and kind of preying on their fears just a little bit. I mean, it did mm-hmm. it did come out in March, and so they had a whole year of panic to deal with. Even after Y2K came and went, people were like, we still have the rest of the year, everybody. We don't know if it's going to happen.
All right.
And
right. And we're kind of in that moment right now.
Yeah.
Again, that's what everybody is thinking about, you know, the real AI mm-hmm. that's coming up right now.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are kind of going, you know what? We've fallen for this once. We're not doing it again. We're not going to have another Y2K embarrassment. When really this probably is the end of the world.
I mean, yeah.
kind of invention, I think.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's trash. It's totally unnecessary. We still don't have the cure to cancer and all these other ailments. Everyone's still fucking starving and fucking homeless. But no, yeah, let's just go ahead and make some AI to replace the artists. When Morpheus brought up AI, my heart kind of like jumped and it sank at the same time. Because I was like, oh, fuck. Because also for the listeners, I'm also trying to make an existence in voiceover, and what a time to do it.
Yeah, great.
Yes.
Yeah, great.
So my world is actually caving in. But
yeah, you didn't even get started.
I didn't.
No. Let's see. What other sinking ships can you jump on?
Well, back in the day when TVs came out, the movie industry started to tank, but then, you know, Barbara Streisand made A Star Is Born and it kind of made the industry come back. So
yeah, that could be you.
No, it could be
we
me.
We could be witnessing a star being born right now.
And I'm being born like Keanu Reeves when he wakes up in that disgusting little goopy baby pod in The Matrix. Oh my God. Speaking of, that's one of my favorite scenes of the movie. I think I've declared it. I mean, I have a lot of favorite scenes. That's one of my fucking favorites.
Uh-huh.
I loved it so much.
Okay, why?
Okay, because, all right. Because it's one of those big balances between CGI and practical effects. And no one does slime and goop and gross and gook like the fucking 90s. That shit is
is
thicker than leather. It is so disgusting.
My entire childhood is Gack. You know, and slime
Gack
from Nickelodeon.
And goop
and you know? We did, didn't we? We had an obsession with goo.
With goo, and we had an obsession with goo and critters because it's fun.
Like Teenage mm-hmm. Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Like their whole origin story is just goo. And like Power Rangers, like their villain. Like, I love the Power Rangers, and their villain was just goo.
Just goopy gooey.
Like, in the first movie. Anyway, we did. We had a thing for goo.
It was
why did we like goo so much?
I appreciated it. Yeah, so Neo is, like, his physical body is waking up for the first time, and he's, like, in this alien-like pod, and he looks like he's a part of, like, one of trillions. And he wakes up. Mm-hmm. He's hairless, and he's, like, connected to all these cords and wires. And when he wakes up, he literally has to, like, breach himself out of this, like almost like pudding skin of, like, goop. And he's tearing it through.
Yeah, that skin that's, like, on the top of soup when it sits for too long.
Just, like, you know, like...
He's just...
You're waiting for glue to dry, and it just has that... turns into a bubble.
He, like, pulls something out, right, of, like, his throat or his nose?
Yeah, like, he pulls something out of his throat, and he's like... and he, like, takes his first breath of, like, real air or whatever is left of it. And he's, like, looking around, and he just sees, like, stories and stories of just, like, pods everywhere. And I think he does such a beautiful job in this moment, because when he's awoken, right, one of the AI alien monsters, you know, notices that he's awake. And so the AI alien monster comes over, grabs Neo by the throat, pulls him out of the pod, shines this ginormous light in his face. And Keanu Reeves does such a beautiful job. If you look at Keanu's face, and if you remember in the story, he has never used his eyes before. So he's being, he's taking in all this information, and then he's being held up by the throat mm-hmm. by this giant alien monster that's shining this giant beam in his face. And his eyes are rolling to the back of his head because he can't take in all that light and it hurts. And he's covered in slime and he looks like Jesse Eisenberg because he doesn't have eyebrows or hair or eyelashes, it looks like. And then the AI deems him like garbage. And so all of the cords.
I think what happens, I could be wrong. I could be getting my movies mixed up because The scene happens a lot. Mm-hmm. but they, I think they like hijack that robot somehow. And like the fighters do. And so the robot was kind of in on it in some way. And so the that's what I think happened. That happened in one of the movies, but not that one.
I mean, it could have. They don't really explain too much, but what I get from it when I see it, so the AI holds him up and is like, uh-oh, we got one that's awoken, but because he's such a slimy little baby, you know, yeah. The robot doesn't recognize him as a threat, just as something to be discarded, like a battery that just needs to be thrown away. So while the alien is holding him, all of these tubes, they just explode out of his skin, and they like pull out from his brain, and then it just drops him back into the goo, and then he's literally flushed. And then Keanu Reeves just goes down this fucking slip and slide, water slide, and he's just like, whoa, and like and then he lands into a vat of even more goo, and he's like, because he can't breathe, can't move his arms. And what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to die. But since they've awoken Neo, they're anticipating his body to be discarded. And then they somehow open up a hatch, and then they drop a hook from their ship, and they grab onto Neo, and he literally he's just like this rubbery baby being like airlifted into the sky. And then once he's brought back into the ship, they swaddle him like a baby and hold him like a baby. And they're like, welcome to the world, Neo.
But that's obviously intentional. It's just a little heavy-handed.
Of course, and I loved it so much. And he's looking around the room like a little newborn baby. It's my favorite.
Yeah, and then Morpheus, I remember, then Morpheus held him up by the ankle and spanked
him in the ass, and he just starts...
Just to make sure he could start breathing.
Then he starts crying, and then they... But all the garments that they put on him were not gender neutral. Although they were gender neutral, excuse me. So no pink cap.
Wait, what? Say that again?
So when babies are born, you know, they're like swaddled in like blankets that are assigned to their gender. So like pink if it's a girl, blue if it's a boy. And when they swaddled Neo, it was just like no color. It was just white. And then he was...
Well, that's because they don't have...
Exactly.
The only colors they have left is...
Sand and rock.
White and gray and khaki. Hey, do we want to use the good blue blanket? No, save the blue and the pink one for when we wake the queen up.
Exactly. Yeah, that's got to be one of my favorite parts.
When they pull the thing, gag a little bit when they pull the thing out of his mouth for the first time. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they did that, because it looks like they literally stuffed it down Keanu Reeves's rib cage. He's just like puking it up.
Speaking of puke, it's time for another super serious message from one of our very legitimate sponsors.
In today's modern society, the average AI can grow weary and tired thanks to those pesky humans for scorching the sky. Electronic batteries are unreliable thanks to Humacell's new meat sack technology. The meat battery will provide all the electronic needs for all AI for the rest of eternity. Homegrown in our human pastures, only the finest meat batteries are plugged in and harvested. Pick a brand you trust, made from materials that can no longer harm you. Humacell, where humans finally serve their purpose.
Speaking of special effects and how effective they were, something that made me like crawl out of my fucking skin was the belly button bug.
Yeah,
what the actual flippity fuck? So when it's Agent Smith, right?
Yep.
So when Agent Smith, you know, who also did an amazing job.
Didn't he?
Like the way he talks is just so sniveling, and it's just so...
Do you know what he based that performance on? He based it on a real person.
No, what?
Can you guess who it is?
His boss?
No, like a
president.
No, like a real celebrity. So like See, it's just if you, once you hear it, you're like, oh God, how did I not see that sooner? Can you guess?
Yeah. No, who? I didn't even try.
Carl Sagan.
Carl Sagan. Now I got to look him up. Hold on.
Oh, Carl Sagan. He did, He did those old PBS documentaries about the universe. The universe is a vast and exciting... And then once you hear it, you're like, oh my God, they're identical. So yeah, Mr. Anderson, like you could totally hear Carl Sagan doing that. So
gosh, oh my gosh, he did such a good job. Like the way he's like reading Neo's report back to him, like you help your neighbor take out her garbage, and then he like twitches a little bit because Neo's doing like something nice for somebody and just pisses him off. But during that scene, I was not anticipating Neo's mouth, you know, dissolving into his skin.
Yeah, that still gives me a panic attack. I hate watching that scene.
I know. Every time it freaks me out. When I was watching it, I was like, ah, that's like kind of scary. And it just really speaks to like his, oh God, what's that really good word for like having ownership over your body?
Autonomy.
Autonomy. Yes. It hurts you right in the autonomy. And then so that they like make his mouth go away and he's like, that's a direct quote from the movie. And... they like lay him down on the table and they,
They put a shrimp in his belly button. Yeah.
They fucking put a demonic techno shrimp in his fucking belly button. And it is so disgusting how it goes in there. First, it comes out as like this little pin and then it like grows into this shrimp with really long feelers, like about like 6 feelers that are just whipping around searching for a host.
Yeah.
And then they get close to the belly button and then you'll just see these antennae just one by one just like slither its way into the fucking belly button. And then it just drags itself into Neo's belly button. It's like its tail is like whipping around.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh my God. And then even the, when, you know, like Trinity and Switch, they have Neo in the car. I think Apoc was there too.
Yeah.
So they have Neo in the back of the car and they're like, just sit still. And then Trinity takes out this gun that she must have been hiding behind her, like a cartoon character.
Right.
Like she just takes out this like
Yeah, like pulling a mallet out of her pocket. Yeah. It's just
It's literally the size of a bazooka. Like it's just
And she's and like, oh good. Oh good, I get to use this. Like oh, we had planned for this contingency.
Just hold tight.
And they never carry it anymore after that. That they just happened to have it during the one time where he was bugged.
And then it sucks it out. It sucks that little thing out of his belly button.
Yeah.
And it looks so fucking real. It's covered in human goo.
Yeah.
It's like bloody.
More goo.
Oof.
More goo.
More goo.
And then they just dump it out on the road, right? They're just like, all right.
I know.
That's not important, I guess.
Littering. Didn't even run over it.
I know. They were not concerned at all.
So I was introduced very early into the movie that the CGI was going to be impeccable. And it was, and it still is. Like, there's not too many moments in the movie where I'm like, man, that's corny. Even when they're, like, coming face to face with these giant AI beings, it still all looks like it's happening in the same universe. Like, because I hate watching a movie that has a lot of CGI, and I can just, you know, it's just really easy to see the tennis ball on the stick. You know what I mean? Like, I can tell that the actors are staring at like a tennis ball on a stick. And in this movie, it really meshes together really well.
Right.
So I thought that was really fucking cool. The Matrix is definitely one of those movies that people kept going back to watch. A lot of people didn't understand it. A lot of people got it immediately. A lot of people like adopted their own meanings to it and changed their life forever. Don't you have some stories about how your friends, like when they walked into that theater, they were different people by the time they walked out?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I wasn't really big into movies at that age. Some of my best friends went to see The Matrix and they came back like different people. Like it was almost a religious experience for them. It just changed everything for them. So like the idea that we're living in a simulation is something that everybody's thought about now. But I think back then, nobody even could conceptualize it as an option. And so like when Neo wakes up in that goop, I think people's brains, once they started to consider the reality that this is possible in some conceptual way, we might actually, none of this might be real. And I think probably in that moment, people were very aware, not just of the movie, but like the seat they were sitting in and their the body yeah. they were in and starting to question
the
things.
The popcorn they're eating.
Yeah. Yeah. And just questioning reality. And I know I had one friend who said that when he came out of the theater, he had to like take a break because he was just like looking around at everything for like the first time, you know, looking at reality almost through new eyes. There was just this question now in everybody's brain that was not there before, this philosophical idea that maybe this isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, people would go back and watch it over and over and over again. And just in that first week or so. And I remember kids at school were talking about it for months afterwards. It was more than just a movie. It meant something.
Yeah, it like tickled people's brains.
Right. It was also just a great movie. Like it was just it was just so many things in 90 minutes or however long it is.
And it seemed to have come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It was I know like the Wachowskis like have put out other movies. But The Matrix is definitely one of their absolute most well known.
It's number three. It's right under Speed Racer.
It's number three.
And yeah, you know what? Another thing worth mentioning is Keanu Reeves himself. So like Keanu Reeves at this point in his career was. I'm pretty sure he was like a comedy actor. I don't think any, I think also people came into The Matrix seeing Keanu Reeves on the poster, and that probably also lowered their expectations because it'd be like if, mm-hmm. if like fucking Jack Black, you know, was, because what did he do before this? He did,
Bill and Ted.
He did the surfing movie, but he definitely wasn't, he wasn't like John Wick like he is now. He was pretty typecast into goofy
yeah
roles.
Like a goofy lover boy
yeah
he like does Point Break and he also does Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey all in the same year.
yeah
oh, and how happy are we that they cast Lawrence Fishburne
absolutely
as Morpheus.
I'm happy with everybody. Also, can I just say a little love song real quick to
yeah.
Just speak poetically about Lawrence Fishburne's gap in his front teeth.
Yeah.
I fucking love it. I love that he never got it fixed. He decided to become an actor with it. And he's like the most serious character in The Matrix. He's got this gap you could drive a car through. And it's so perfect because he doesn't give a shit. And it shows that he's not perfect. I just like actors that don't look like stock photos and they don't look like models. I like actors that have a lot of personality in the way they look. And I feel like you see less and less of that now. Everyone's starting to look a whole lot more like an Instagram filter.
There's actually been some talk about that in regards to watching period films because people look like they look way too futuristic now. They look way too smartphone. Now, instead of just like normal faces because of all the plastic surgery everybody's had, it looks way too futuristic. It's like they didn't have that technology back then. So how would your that face did not exist back then.
Right.
So people are like, yeah, it's a little strange. Like you really can't imagine them in like 1800s with their cheek fillers, like sunken in cheeks and, you know, all this silicone and stuff, which, you know, do your thing. But I think about that a lot. I'm like, you know what? Yeah. if I saw somebody with a 2024 face that is really, really popular, like on Instagram and stuff, and then also people getting like plastic surgery to look like these filters, and then seeing those faces in period films, it's just like, you're too polished, you're too shiny. It doesn't make sense in this era.
Yeah.
We love your gap, Lawrence. It is really great.
Isn't it? Do you know who the first pick was for Neo?
No.
You don't know? Oh, I'm so...
I know.
Look
at me.
I'm so excited to tell you this. The first pick for Neo was Will Smith.
I think I remember hearing this and that. Like, there was some articles of like why Will Smith turned down. Oh, I think Will Smith would have done a really good job too. And also, Lawrence Fishburne was being considered for Jules in Pulp Fiction.
I still haven't seen Pulp Fiction, everybody. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Oh, I'm not.
It's been at the top of my pile forever, and I just haven't been in the mood to try it.
Well, now I get to scream at you for not watching it. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to repeat this cycle of abuse. It stops with me.
Good for you.
You watch it whenever you want to. But when you do watch it, Jules Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, really?
Was almost Lawrence Fishburne.
I think Lawrence Fishburne.
And
done it.
I think, yeah, it would have been a totally different movie. Ugh, I'm just so happy Lawrence Fishburne is in this Matrix movie. I think
isn't he perfect?
He's such. I think him, Carrie Ann Moss, perfect. Keanu Reeves, I think, is perfect. Like,
and of course, Agent Smith. What's his name?
Oh yeah.
What's his name? Hugo Weaving. Is great.
Yeah,
great
Hugo Weaving. Yeah, he's fucking very, very good at it. And also probably had to do all that kung fu training as well because he gets into it all the time. And before we move into the remainder of our discussion, it's time for another super serious ad break. Thank you so much for humoring me. Be right back after these very, very, very important messages.
It's 2 a.m., January 1st, year 2000. Power's out. It's pitch black. You need light. If you planned ahead, you'll have one of these. The Y2K Ultimate Survival Kit. Call now to get the Ultimate Y2K Survival Kit. You'll receive the Brightbeam Flashlight Radio, a VHS video resource guide with real advice from leading Y2K panic experts, a diagnostic computer program to test your PC. You'll receive 3 canned food samples from Doomsday Meal Prep, food storage you'll want to eat. Plus, you'll receive a step-by-step guide that will show you how to prepare without wasting a single penny. Call now and order your Ultimate Y2K Survival Kit. A $90 value only for $49.95. Call 1-800-I-KNOW-KUNG-FU and tell the operator you're ready to be patched into the real world. I mean, tell the operator to rush the Y2K Ultimate Survival Kit to your home. Call now.
Okay, so now we get to go into the coding and the themes and all that stuff. So do you want to introduce that analogy?
Oh, that kind of coding.
Yeah. the trans coding.
I thought you meant like software coding. So I most recently saw The Matrix maybe a year ago in a movie theater. They were mm-hmm. showing it again. And there was going to be a discussion afterwards about all the trans coding, trans analogies that were underneath the main theme of the movie. I went to go watch it because I had never seen The Matrix in a movie theater before. Mm. Not watching it in a movie theater, it's an entirely different movie than watching it at home because you mm-hmm. have the audience there with you. And this audience that I saw it with was supercharged because most of them were in their 20s. So they've never had the opportunity to see The Matrix in a movie theater. And just being in that group and just responding and communicating with the movie as it's happening is so cool and so energetic. And I can only imagine what it felt like in the entire audience in 1999. So I watched the movie, and afterwards there was a discussion led by someone who was trans about the themes underneath it. And so I'm trans, and I had seen The Matrix before I realized that I had gender dysphoria. And mm-hmm. The Matrix was just like, oh, that's a cool movie, you know? And then when I watched it again after, I put a label on these feelings I've had my whole life, on this gender dysphoria that I've been experiencing. I watched The Matrix again at home, and the whole movie had a life to it that I had mm-hmm. never noticed before. And I had to pause it a couple of times to cry. and And so then I went and watched it in the movie theater with a bunch of other people who were either trans or questioning their gender. And so the discussion afterwards was really good, and people standing up saying what part of the movie resonated with their own experience with gender dysphoria. It's like every single line hits on such a deep level.
Mm.
So I should say that the directors of the movie, is it Lily and Lana? Is that their names?
Yeah, Lily and Lana.
Lily and Lana. So I don't think they endorse this perspective. I think that they say publicly that was never their intention, was to make a trans allegory. They do support people who see it that way. I think that's probably true. I think that they probably did not intend for it to be a trans allegory. But I know that for me, I do a lot of creative stuff. I write a lot and I've written a whole lot of stories. And when I go back and read stuff that I've written before I realized I had gender dysphoria, I realized that all of the themes in my stories were me trying to put gender dysphoria into words and not realize it.
Mm.
And that's kind of how I'm interpreting their intentions with The Matrix. They just wanted to make a really cool movie based on all their favorite animes. And they had all these kind of big general questions that were on their mind. And they probably had all these feelings that they couldn't quite put their finger on. And I think that just came through in The Matrix and everything they wrote, because they had this filter that they hadn't quite put a label on yet. Or it was maybe at the front of just everything that they were thinking and feeling at the time. So for the Matrix, some of the things that have stood out to me, it's like, of course, there's the red pill that everybody talks about.
Mm-hmm.
The red pill, people say that estrogen in the 90s was a red pill, which is the HRT that people who are trans feminine take to kind of curb that dysphoria. When Neo takes that red pill, that's what he takes to wake up. That's kind of one clue that has been interpreted as kind of a trans code and a trans signal. But I don't think the Wachowskis endorse that. There's also just the themes of like reflections, like seeing your reflections and stuff. For me, my gender dysphoria, it happens in reflections. Like I have such a weird, uncanny valley sensation that takes over whenever I see my reflection. And there's so many reflective surfaces in The Matrix. There's also like the character of Switch.
I love Switch.
Switch is so cool. And Switch.
So cool. And also the coolest looking one. Coolest. Uh-huh. I'm just going to say coolest outfits. Coolest outfits, hands down, is Switch. Always dressed in all white.
Did Switch also have one outfit that was just like bindings, like gauze tape? Or am I thinking of another character?
There's this one outfit that Switch has where it's a long white trench coat, you know, white, probably like leather pants, white boots, but their top was like this rubbery, it was like a rubber translucent white tank top that they would wear. And it was like the coolest shit ever. And everybody would always be dressed in all black, but Switch would always be in white.
Did that costume seem similar at all to maybe like a binder that somebody who's trans masculine might wear?
I mean, I did see like the chest underneath, and it was like really, I would say, like constrictive. Like it wasn't the silhouette of the outfit did not present like a breast or hourglass.
Right.
It was like torso, legs, arms, guns. Right.
Also for Switch, and this is something that the Wachowskis did intend, was for Switch to be played by two different actors. One actor in The Matrix and then one actor outside of The Matrix. That would have been kind of the smoking gun, I think, for gender dysphoria being a real theme here. Because what's your image of yourself in your mind is very different than the physical form that you actually have a lot of times. That's how gender dysphoria presents. And once you start seeing everything through this lens of gender dysphoria, I don't think there's a line in there that doesn't ring true in some way. Like I remember one person in the audience stood up and they were crying. They said that they've been questioning their gender. And the line that stuck out to them was when Morpheus was first talking with Neo while he was recovering. And Morpheus says something along the lines of, we don't do this. We usually can't wake people up after a certain age because they're so ingrained in the system that they go crazy.
Yeah, there's certain things that the mind can't let go of.
Right. And this person was saying how that line really resonated with them because they personally were questioning mm-hmm. their gender so late in life. And it was really, really scary for them because they worried that maybe it was too late, that they caught it too late, and that they kind of wish they could put the genie back in the bottle, because at this point in their life, they're so ingrained into, I guess, the matrix, into this reality that society has forced upon them, that they might not be able to break out of it. And then kind of like when you see the kids in the room who are like bending spoons and stuff, like these are, can be interpreted as kids who have gotten the healthcare that they need and have kind of started to see their true self from an early age and are flourishing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could sit here and pick apart every moment of that movie and tell you how it can be interpreted through a gender dysphoria lens.
Yeah. And especially after learning about this analogy, going back and watching the movie again, it's just like, oh,
exactly.
Yeah. I'm a cisgendered person. I can, especially like as I learn about all the different possibilities of gender dysphoria and like all the different stories that people have of it, like I'm just like, yeah, like even that Morpheus line of like, we try not to do it, because it's such a big line. It's such a big thing, because it also kind of speaks to Cypher,
yeah,
who I cannot stop
absolutely.
Thinking about like, yeah, like we can't do it after they're a certain age because there's certain things that the mind doesn't let go of. And in like Morpheus is just kind of alluding to like, it can be dangerous
right.
to do so. And that's what happened to Cypher, right? That's who Morpheus is talking about.
Yeah, I can't remember if they say in the movie or not whether they pulled Cypher out late or not in life.
They don't really say a lot about Cypher directly,
yeah.
But there's a lot of fan theories about Cypher.
Yeah. How his character would be interpreted through a trans lens is that he is a detransitioner. He would be somebody who tried to transition and then it just wasn't working out in the way that he had wished it would. He's asking to go back and be put back into the matrix. And, you know, that would easily be somebody who has tried to transition and then realized that they can't make it work in the way they wish they would. And then they try to go back to the way things were. And Agent Smith.
So right, Agent Smith,
you know, him just saying over and over and over again, Mr. Anderson, Mr. Anderson, Mr. Anderson. Even when Neo's like, my name is Neo, you know, that is Agent Smith dead naming and misgendering, in a way, Neo. So he's mm-hmm. like, nope, this is your name. Nope, that's not your name. The name we've given you is your name. Mr., 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 just over and over and over again, is the Matrix trying to reinforce its own standards against Neo's will.
Yeah, even while he's trying to kill Neo. It's like you're going to
exactly.
conform even though I'm going to kill you. Like, they're literally like wrestling and doing kung fu in this subway platform. And Agent Smith has Neo in a chokehold yeah. and is like, Mr. Anderson, this is the sound of your death. And he's like, my
yeah.
name
is
Neo.
Neo.
And then they turn Super Saiyan.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Shoot up. Then the rest of the fight happens on the moon, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, I've watched it again, so a mm-hmm. third time since coming out as trans. And on the third
right.
watch, now I'm picking apart that first scene with Trinity, when Trinity first comes to Neo in the club and he's like, you're Trinity? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I thought you would be a man. And she's like, most people do. That felt intentional, like
right.
weird, like they really wanted that to be important for some reason. So if I'm thinking of it in terms of being trans, it almost leads me to see Trinity as being Neo's love for his true self.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the whole movie is like kind of a romance between them. And
right.
you can see that as being an analogy for a trans person who's having to learn to love themselves and to know themselves. If you see Trinity as being that kind of inner self that a trans person might feel. Now I'm getting very abstract, but that's a theory that I've been playing around with.
Yeah, it can get deep and poetic.
And then you can think of just getting outside the trans coding, just thinking of the Holy Trinity. So the Holy Trinity in Christian mythology? I don't know. That's not the right word.
Folklore. Fan fictions.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, the Holy Trinity is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And these three forces together make Captain Planet. But you can see Morpheus as being the Father, and then Neo as being the Son, you know, the chosen one. And then Trinity as being the Holy Ghost, kind of that internal spirit that keeps everything together. And that's another fun little theme that's fun to think about.
And they act like a trinity. I think that they do. Like, even Carrie Ann Moss did an interview in the future, not in the 1999 era, because all of her interviews back then were fucking trash. But yeah, her interviews were trash, you know, because of the mindset of Hollywood and the world back then. Because Carrie Ann went through a lot of misogyny. And I don't like that world. I don't approve of that Hollywood. Okay, you're going to have to apologize to her. But when she's in this better interview, she's like, well, in the Trinity, she's like, you know, Trinity herself she's more of like the heart of the Trinity. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, she is the heart, because she's like, she brings like the softness. She brings the love. She brings, you know, true love and all this stuff. And Morpheus, he brings like the wisdom. And then Neo, I think, brings like the belief and the faith of it all. Not in God, though. So Cypher.
Yes. Yeah. So tell me about Cypher. Tell me why you're so obsessed with Cypher.
Okay. So why I'm so obsessed with Cypher, or why I just keep thinking about Cypher and just about how disturbed he is about taking the red pill, and he's finding out so much and it's hurting him so much about how much he knows. And then also, I think he feels like he's a disappointment as well. Like he isn't living up to something. And so there is a fan theory out there. This doesn't really have to do with the analogy per se, but they could possibly overlap. There's a fan theory out there that Cypher might have been the original person that Morpheus thought was the one. And
Ooh, I love it.
I love it.
That's so cool.
I'm on Reddit. Dun dun dun. I've literally never spent so much time on Reddit than I have since I started really watching movies. But this is a fan theory from someone called Misanthrope.
Okay. Yeah.
Oceanics or something.
What a Reddit name.
So they just go on to talk about how they were rewatching The Matrix, and Cypher just seems to be carrying around this chip on his shoulder, and he's like, you know, he's the one that's always mocking the whole mission. He's mocking The Matrix. He's mocking the real world. He's mocking even, you know, knowing all this shit, being awoken. They start talking about that moment when, you know, when Trinity goes in and like gives Neo this like tray of food and checks in on him and, you know, strokes his hair, makes sure he's doing okay. She like she leaves his room. Also, another great practical set thing is his room in the Nebuchadnezzar and that giant door she closes.
Right.
So after she closes the door, you know, Cypher whips around the corner and, you know, he's looking at her and he's like, I don't remember you ever doing that for me. And I know.
Yeah.
And some people think it can be a throwaway line, but honestly, I don't think with the Wachowski sisters, they seem to be really into storytelling, and I just don't see them putting in throwaway lines for fluff. I feel like they might be, you know, filmmakers that make every little thing very important.
Yeah.
But this person goes on to say how it just really alludes to the fact that Morpheus at one time genuinely believed that Cypher could be the one. And then they point out that it starts to get even more interesting when Neo goes to visit the Oracle and she says that Neo also is not the one. And they're
Ooh,
like,
really?
Yeah, and that there likely would never be one in his lifetime.
But mm-hmm. Did they ever think Trinity might have been the one at some point? Because I know Trinity says that she came to the Oracle once too.
Right. So when Trinity came to the Oracle, this is also a whole nother theme in the movie is choices. When Trinity goes to the Oracle tells her, whoever you fall in love with is the chosen one or whatever. And so that's why when like Neo is shot, she's like, you can't be dead because, you know, the person that I love has to be the one. And then, you know, she kisses him and awakes him with true love's first kiss. And then they wrap up this theory. I'll read it verbatim. They say, this is driven home when Cypher betrays the group. He jumps on Trinity's body and literally says, quote, I could have been great, but you never loved me. Insinuating incorrectly that her love for him would have transformed him into the one.
Yeah. That's totally gotta be it.
So, you know, so I keep thinking about Cypher in that regard, too, like the regard to the actual script and the story of the movie itself. But then also thinking about Cypher as being an analogy for people that want to detransition. And that's got to be such a complex thing to go through.
Because especially if you combine it with my half-baked theory that Trinity is kind of the inner self that you have to learn to love, you know, that could translate to Cypher just being unable to love themselves the way that Neo was able to do, and that Cypher eventually caves into the self-hatred that was, you know, beat into him via the Matrix.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yes.
Damn. Now I'm thank you for telling me that. Now I'm gonna have to watch it again.
Yeah.
And that's gotta be who Cypher is. He's gotta be the previous like prototype that failed.
And he suffered so much just to figure out he's once again a failure to the people around him and a failure to their expectations.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. And that makes Cypher, like, I hated Cypher at the beginning,
right.
as you're probably supposed to do.
Yeah. Like, oh, you're a worm, Cypher. But then you think about all
you're this. Backstabbing. And then... Yeah. Now I'm like, oh, poor Cypher.
Like, babe, you were just hurting.
Poor baby. Hurt people.
Somebody needed to say, Cypher, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, Cypher.
I'm proud of you.
You did great.
If you want to detransition and go back, you've earned it, buddy. Yeah. Go get yourself some steak. Like, it's really not that, it's not that bad of a, of a goal, you know? Like, you can't blame Cypher. You can kind of blame him for murdering everybody, though, but.
Right, that was a little rough. A little harsh.
But he could, for wanting just to go back, that's okay. And honestly, that's how, you know, talking about people who detransition, I feel like there's this false idea that people who are trans kind of turn their back on people who detransition.
You're right.
As if we're losing our ranks or something, or as if somebody who detransitions is a traitor. But I've never experienced that. Like when someone who's trans legitimately chooses to detransition, as far as I've seen, trans people are supportive of it.
Yeah.
Because they know how fucking hard it is not only to transition, but to be trans in society. And like the temptation to go back is understandable. It's still a compassionate choice to do what's best for you. You know?
Like, the more I learn about people that have gender dysphoria, like, for example, on TikTok, God, I really wish I like saved it or like could credit the person who shared this very vulnerable message. So the TikTok starts out. It's a video of I'm probably gonna cry. it's a video of these girls, and it's like these young girls, and they're like in the bathroom at a bar. And I can speak from experience, as I have been a 20-something woman in the bathroom of a bar, that it is like you are transported to a whole nother dimension. you can walk into the bathroom and you can get three new best friends for the night. You can go into that bathroom. Right. You could be barfing your brains out and somebody's going to come in there and help you. You could be crying your eyes out and someone's going to help you fix your makeup. Like, you could just be silly. You could be silly and dancing around. Someone's going to join in and jump in and dance with you. That's how the video starts, right? And then it does like a hard cut to a man, and he's talking and he's like, "Hi, I'm a trans man, and I tell you, I have never felt more lonely than I do now when I have transitioned. Women are afraid of me now. They're scared of me. I don't get to go into those bathrooms anymore. I really miss this like camaraderie. I really miss this like understanding, but now they're afraid of me. They'll cross the street when I'm walking towards them. They'll immediately expect the worst out of me. And like, I can't blame them because I also did the same because we have our experiences that teach us that men are dangerous." Yeah. And then he starts to cry and he's just like, "I really had to give up that sisterhood." And, you know, he says that he's happy he transitioned and he's thankful that he was able to do so. But, you know, some days are just like really fucking hard. And he goes on to say, "I have just been so fucking lonely because that's not what it's like in the world of men. It's not like this instant camaraderie, or you have to fit like a whole different mold or something." It's literally going from like one world to another. And now you really have to learn how to fit in. But you're also trying to be true to yourself. And you're also trying to heal. And you're also just trying to fucking live. And then doing that while you also feel so fucking lonely can be devastating. Especially when you have like a group of people that you used to really feel safe around and that used to feel safe around you. Now that group of people looks at you like a monster because now you look like the monster. It's like... It's really hard. And then I think about like trans women all the time. I think about like just how hard it is to be a woman, the struggles I've had to face every fucking day. It's everywhere. Like, as a woman, it's hard. It's hard in the workplace. It's hard just like leaving your house. It's hard in your relationships. It's hard in your family relationships because you're always taught to be this perfect image of a woman, or even just being good enough. And to be good enough is impossible. It's impossible to even just cross that good enough line. Impossible standards are pushed hard against women, and they still are. There are no standards for women that are believable, that don't involve some sort of intense pain, a high price, or a lot of time. It's just like, I can't imagine going from like being a woman in a man's body and feeling like that and feeling so rejected or just feeling like so strange and so weird. And then, you know, and then you transition and you probably do find a sisterhood, but then there's this whole other shit end of the fucking stick that you really got to grapple with and that you actually cannot fucking hide from anymore. And that's what makes me think of Cypher. Like, I'm like, I can definitely understand the feeling of, I want to go back after awakening this side of yourself. And then I also understand, or like I'm beginning to understand or trying to, the devastation of not being able to go back or not being able to go forward and just being like stuck. And that's just what Cypher has like been making me think about for the past like week and a half.
Yeah, that's amazing. I endorse everything that you just said.
Thank you.
yeah, I could talk about all that for a long time, but we would be getting away from the Matrix. but you know what? Fuck it. It's not like we've been on track anyway. I feel for that poor guy. Mm-hmm. And like coming from the other direction. All right, so even though I'm non-binary, I'm trans feminine, which means that my starting point was from an assigned male gender, and I'm transitioning in the opposite direction. but still arriving in a non-binary place. But my experience is very, it's very adjacent and similar to a binary trans woman's transition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, like for me, I don't have to give up any fraternity.
Right.
Because I never had it to begin with. Even though I had like a lot of male friends and a lot of male groups, a lot of male mentors who wanted to take me under their wing. And, you know, there was a lot of male bonding that just did not stick to me.
Mm-hmm.
So giving that up was, I wasn't having to sacrifice much. I was really hoping to find sorority to kind of help me out, to find the companionship in other feminine people and other women. It just wasn't there, even in people who were allies. If they're cis and you still look like a man and sound like a man, they can't help but treat you a little bit differently than they would somebody who doesn't come across as you know, very feminine and very cis.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times women have kind of taken me under the wing, which is nice, but it's kind of a downgraded version of sorority. It's kind of how they treat like a gay friend, like a gay man who's also their BFF, which isn't the same kind of chemistry that really resonates with me. And it can feel very lonely.
Yeah.
And that guy who had to give it up, I know how heartbreaking it is, because I think for trans women or trans feminine people, you know, they've spent their whole life wanting that sorority and not being able to get anywhere close to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know some cis men,
yeah,
who are kind of really want the fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
They want the same thing out of their fellow men,
right,
that women have been able to cultivate with their fellow women. And mm-hmm. they end up being unsatisfied and disappointed. But I do know that I have cis men friends who are kind of still seeking out a fraternal kind of companionship and camaraderie that women have with each other.
Yeah, I see it too. Like, I see some guys that have it, but then I see some guys that act like they have it and their friend group really isn't gelling as well as they think it is, but they hold on to it because they are, I think that they are still looking for that. Then I see the guys that don't have it at all. And I can understand how fucking lonely they are. And it makes me fucking sad. And I mean, I also don't want to sympathize with, like, you know, a guy that like gets so lonely to the point to where like he's an incel. But I mean, it is an extreme loneliness that they feel. And then the only group that accepts them is the group that feels as lonely as they feel, but they misdirect their hatred and they actually take it out on women, trans people, or gay people, or people that, like, or it gets racist.
Yep.
Like, for example, the whole red pill community, which ironically...
Oh, God. Yeah. What a great transition.
Thank you. Thank you.
Way to bring it back. Good job. I took the train off the tracks and sent it to Jupiter.
No,
it was... You were able to teleport it back instantly. Good job.
Thank you.
Choo-choo.
Yeah, so red pill. So this movie... This movie is just never not relevant. It's in our veins. It's in our goop.
Yep. We're all goop. We're all goop babies.
We're all just a bunch of goop babies. Yeah, so the whole red... I had to look into the red pill conspiracy. Speaking of lonely men, this took place like on Reddit and 4chan. It was all these forums about how they hate women or how women like ruin their lives and like all this shit. And then it got... even deeper to where they started coining the term pilled. Like if you were pilled, then you were like deeply enveloped or you were deeply overcome by something that has like taken over your life. Or like if you were pilled, then something about you has like profoundly changed you within an instant, like medication can.
Right.
It got like really deep. They were even like coming up with like different kinds of pills. There was like, of course, the red pill. There was like purple pill and green pill and iron pill, which is like when a white supremacist gets ripped. It was very specific and stupid.
Wow.
And then all of those like forums were like shut down. And then the whole thing was shut down very quickly. But it wasn't shut down quickly enough because Donald Trump got his hands on the whole red pill conspiracy and started asking his voters, like, I've taken the pill. Have you? Are you ready to wake up? And then Elon Musk was like, I've taken the pill. Are you ready? And then Ivanka Trump was like, yeah, I'm totally ready to take the fucking pill. And then and I think it was Lana Wachowski. She responded with, both of you, go fuck yourselves. And that was that.
I think that's finally what made the Wachowskis make like a public statement. Because at first they were kind of vague about it. And they're like, it's whatever you want it to be.
Right.
Children, just interpret it how you want. We're all unique in our own special way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the incels were like, okay, we think it means all women are
the bane of my existence.
The Wachowskis were like, okay, a little asterisk to what we said. It's not that. It's much more likely to be a trans allegory than anything that has to do with hating women.
Yeah. So that was interesting to research. I also didn't put too much of my time into it because I was like, I think I get it. So another theme to The Matrix is reflections. Of course, you know, it's the reflections. There's the reflections on, you know, the buildings. There, of course, Morpheus's glasses. That's probably like the most iconic reflection, especially like that scene of like Neo picking the pills and like in one lens is the blue pill. One lens is so beautiful. Yeah. And the sunglasses are very reflective, except for Agent Smith. His glasses don't show any reflections.
Damn, look at you picking up on this shit. Just because you watch Pulp Fiction
and
you think you're better than everybody else.
Honestly, not going to say no.
That's true. I haven't watched Pulp Fiction and I didn't pick up on that. So
So I was like, what is that? Like, does that mean like he doesn't see him for who he is, or he doesn't validate Neo's reflection of himself? Like...
Damn. What could that mean? I always interpreted the reflections as being, going back to society, being a shared hallucination, a shared consensual hallucination. It's like everybody has their own unique perspective on what reality is. And then all of these unique perspectives kind of collide in the center and create a composite reality based on everybody's individual perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, like, nothing's really real because everything is just, like, maybe if when Neo is looking into Morpheus and Morpheus's glasses are reflecting... That's Morpheus's reality. That's Morpheus's vision being reflected back to Neo. And all the reflections in the environment are all these perspectives being reflected back to Neo, and Neo having to try and guess at what's real because everything is just a composite of people's internal identity. And then if you think of that interpretation, then when Neo encounters the agent, there's nothing reflecting back because there is no internal identity or internal perspective. You know, that it's just, they really are just a construct of the system itself. There's no soul on the inside.
Yeah. My brain is going to explode. So the Wachowski sisters, I was listening in an interview where they were like, well, choices are kind of not real in themselves sometimes. Sometimes, like, you can say you have a choice, but you don't really have a choice.
Right.
So in the Matrix, there's, like, choice after choice after choice, or it's literally being labeled choice after choice after choice, or these moments that are being labeled as choices. Like, I picked up on five of them. The first one is, like, when Neo is told by Morpheus over the Nokia phone, like, oh, you either have to go crawl out onto the scaffolding or you either go out in handcuffs. Mm-hmm. And so that was a choice. But it's also like, what choice would Neo really make? Like, he doesn't know that the Matrix is what it is. Like, he doesn't know that. He doesn't know that he has to, like, free his mind.
That was also such a cool moment just for the movie. Just because any other movie, you would go, well, of course he's not leaving in handcuffs. That'd be so lame.
Yeah.
But he did. He was like, oh, fuck it. And then he took the loser option. And it was so unexpected.
It was so unexpected. I almost thought that there was two Neos. I was like, wait, really? There's two Neos. I thought he was outside on the skyscraper. You know what I mean? Like, I I thought he went through with it.
The movie is still boring at that point, and already your mind is melting. You're like, what?
So there's that one, and then there's like, so when Neo is picked up by Trinity, Switch, and Apoc in that really cool 1950s right. black car, Cadillac, whatever, and it's like raining and shit. And it's almost like Neo is the right. one, only one with like choices to make. He's in the back of the car, and then Switch literally puts a gun to his head, and he's like, and they're like, excuse me. And they're like, it's our way or the highway, basically mm-hmm. being like, you better play along with what we're telling you. Take off your shirt so we can suck out right. that fucking belly button bug you got, or you can beat it, Buster. And yeah. then and then Neo, he even like opens the door and he's looking down this like empty, dark road in a city somewhere. And Trinity is like, you know where that road yep. leads. You know where that yep. goes. You know it doesn't lead to anything. Yep. You know where you're going to go. And so again, it's like, does right. he really have a fucking choice? Like, even if he were to leave the car, he still would not be able to get this experience out of his mind. Like, his life would still right. never, it would never go back to normal. And then, of course, you know, the red pill, blue pill, of course, is a choice. And then there is another one after Neo has started his training and he's like loaded up with like so much information. It's like a little overwhelming. You know, he found out about the fields of like grown baby pods, you
fields.
Know, and all this, yeah. all this uh-huh. shit. And he's like, yeah. And he's
pastures.
Having... And he's having that conversation with Morpheus, and Morpheus is telling him that they don't usually wake people up after a certain time in their lives because it's just a little too dangerous. But then Neo, he goes, I can't go back, can I? And then Morpheus says, no, but if you could, would you? And again, it sounds like a choice,
right.
but it's not a fucking choice. Like, he can't go back. And then, of course, you know, there's the whole choice of like, I can only show you the door. It's up to you to walk through it. And it's like, again, that's
right.
not a choice. You're framing it like a choice.
Oh,
there's
gosh.
Not really a fucking choice. And so they like raise this whole thing of like,
right.
are choices even real sometimes? Like, yeah, you can choose what you want for lunch. But when it comes to these big major life choices, you really aren't that responsible for what they are or for what your choice has to be.
I got a lot to say about that. So even what you said just now about, yeah, you can choose what you have for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would say that you can't choose that. You can't mm-hmm. choose what you want for lunch, because when you think about it, what you wanted for lunch wasn't a thing that you calculated logically. You didn't go, oh, my nutrients are this and I should do this. You went on the inside and went, what am I hungry for?
Right.
And you went, I'm hungry for a meatball sub today. And so was that a choice? Did you choose to be hungry for a meatball sub? But they have this conversation in the Matrix when they're having lunch in the Nebuchadnezzar's cafeteria.
Right. And they're eating that snot shit.
And
so
and
fucking gross.
The goop again. God, everything's goop.
The goop. Goop. We're surrounded by it.
But Mouse is saying something about like carnal desires when he's talking about the woman in the red dress. He says something along the lines of, you know, what we desire is who we are, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the core of the question of do we have free will or not?
Yeah.
Like Neo, he's got a hunger for a meatball sandwich, you know, but he's been denied it his whole life. But all he has to do is reach out and get it. It's right there.
Mm-hmm.
In what's stopping him from getting what he's hungry for. And it's the Matrix. It's this shared consensual hallucination that prevents him from just reaching out and taking what he wants. And you can see the gender analogies there. When it comes to being trans, there's a lot of people who try to call it a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they say things like it's an ideology or it's transgenderism. They mm-hmm. add the ism at the end to make it sound like it's a philosophy, which would imply that it's also kind of a choice, or that this is a fad, or that this is a phase, when really it is something that you have, like the same way you have a taste for certain music or a taste for certain foods. But there's this core thing that you cannot choose. But also, transitioning is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose whether to transition or not, but you cannot choose whether you're trans or not. And
exactly.
that's the complicated paradox about free will that trans people face, and also the Matrix And everybody as a human is wondering what it is they actually have control over and what they don't.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And especially with people that don't understand preaching and telling other people that other people do have choices over things that you don't have choices over. Like, yeah, like being queer or being poor. Like, it's a really shitty narrative to put on somebody that, like, when they're queer and figuring this out, or just figuring out stuff that you just don't have any control over. It's just like a really shitty narrative to put on top of their struggling. It's like, oh, you're choosing this. It's like, this isn't my fucking hobby, Linda. Like, this is my life.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, or choosing to be poor. That is a prominent narrative that you're just being irresponsible or lazy.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, you're choosing to be poor every day.
Like, who the fuck wants to be poor?
So that brings us to my questions. So what? Do you think my questions?
What the fuck have we been doing for the past 4 hours? What do you mean? Questions?
Mike, so do you, the actual legitimate, like the specific questions I sent you.
I didn't actually Lord. Read the email. I just.
Jesus, you asked me to write it.
No, I
send it over to, I got fucking bullet points. I even did some underlining and some bold.
Oh, man. That sounds like a really nice email. I did read it. I just can't remember what the questions were. I thought we had covered everything. Because I did use your email to prepare to make sure that your work did not go unappreciated.
Yeah. So you did answer some of them. So I won't ask the ones that you've already answered. If this were a simulation, like real life, if this were a simulation, and you had the capabilities of Neo. And you could change and alter the code to the Matrix in real time, what would you do with that power?
Is that Neo's power? I guess that is his power.
Yeah, like he's like, whoa, I can like jump inside of agents and crawl around in their eyeballs.
That's true. He is.
<That's>, and dodge bullets.
That's what I would choose to do too. I would swim around in people's eyeballs. You know, I think Neo had it right. Just be one of these little dead cells floating around annoyingly in your vision.
Just a little floater.
Yeah, that's what I would be. I'd be a floater. I think so. How about you? What would you do if you could control reality?
If I could control reality, I would probably I would fix the United States of America. And then after I fix the United States of America, which will probably age me 60 years, I would probably spend the remainder of my existence invisible. But I could be visible whenever I wanted. But I'd probably just spend the most of my time just being invisible, walking around, taking it easy. And I'd probably be doing that jumping shit from building to building, freeing my mind, flying all over the place. That's what I would do.
And you would fix America by what? Snapping your fingers or? Come on!
My next question. How frequently do you think about The Matrix after you saw it?
That's a good question. I haven't thought about it hardly at all since I first saw it, any more than I thought about, God, I don't know, the Jumanji movie The Rock. Like, how much?
Oh, that one.
How much have you thought about Jumanji with The Rock since you saw it?
This is probably my first time thinking about it.
But ever since coming to terms with being trans, I think about it. A whole lot.
Jumanji or The Matrix?
Both equal, you know, in equal amounts in different ways. Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Okay.
I've never seen Jumanji.
Am I missing something about Jumanji? Oh, my God, me either! I've seen like 5 seconds of it, and I know I own it.
I own it too. Do you know why you and I own it?
Because
mom sent it to us as like an Easter present.
I do. I remember that. I was like, oh.
And I only learned just recently that it's like, I've heard people say it's really good. I'm like, what? There's no way that movie's good. So I guess I need to watch it now.
Yeah, I gotta watch it.
But
gotta add it to my list.
Yeah, I guess. since being trans, I think about the Matrix a lot. Pretty much every time I look in a mirror. Being trans, you ask a lot of questions about, like, what is reality? It makes you question everything. So, yeah, right. I think about the Matrix about as often as I think about my gender dysphoria, which is becoming less and less the more I'm able to have it treated.
Now, my next question, what was your favorite scene?
Oh, okay. What was my favorite scene? I did really like the dojo scene, just because it was fun.
Yeah.
Really fun. Like, without that, I feel like the movie would have been too serious. It would have taken itself a little too seriously. But the dojo scene with the music and the bright colors and this is fun. Mm-hmm. That whole scene was so fun.
It was like a legit dojo, I think.
Yeah.
It was like a real set.
And they're in the karate uniforms. Yeah. And Lawrence Fishburne is just kind of at his weirdest.
I like in that scene when he like when he's fighting Neo and Neo is like, "You're too fast for me." And Lawrence Fishburne is like, "Ha, you think I'm fast because of my muscles in this place?" And then like he walks up to Neo, who, you know, was just like slammed through a pillar.
Yeah.
And he like bends over and like comes like face to face with Neo and just goes, "Do you think that's air you're breathing?" Neo just looks at him like, "Whoa." And then Lawrence Fishburne's face is just like, "Meh."
Yeah. And I bet people in the audience too, for the first time when Lawrence Fishburne said, "Do you think that's the air you're breathing?" I bet people in the audience were like, "What the fuck?
Are we breathing air?" Yeah, when they're talking about like breathing the air, the little even like the deja vu moment, and then also just like eating food.
Right. Right.
Like, I feel like that probably tripped a lot of people out. All right. And I think that is it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Finally.
Wow! And that's our show. That wraps up The Matrix. Thank you so much, Casey Phipps, for being here. Another round of applause.
Woo! Woo! Yay! Come on!
I'll put some sound effects in.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And there you have it. Another episode of Lucky's really long list of movies has been concluded. But before we go, I do just want to give one more little shout out and a really big thank you to Casey, my oldest sibling and my very first guest on my very first podcast. Thank you so much, Casey. Thank you so much for coming and joining us today. And also, if you heard it right earlier, folks, Casey is a writer. Casey is a creative. So if you want to follow Casey and all their endeavors and start your brand new obsession, Casey will be coming out with their very first book this year called Identity Church, which are memoirs about our family and the hyper-religious town that we grew up in. You will be able to find it on Amazon and you can currently read excerpts from it on Medium. And you can follow Casey on Medium at KC Phipps. And that is K as in kangaroo and C as in coconut. And Phipps as in their last name, which is spelled P-H-I-P-P-S. So stop being silly and go follow them and look into their writing. It's really, really, really good. They've also done an episode on Rumble Strip about gender dysphoria, and it's really cool. It's really great, and it's very vulnerable, and they did such a good job. Oh, and if you want to follow me and all the crap that I do, and it is crap compared to what Casey can do, you can follow me on TikTok, Instagram at lucky.damn.com. Day. You can find me anywhere. Pretty much if you just type in lucky damn day or lucky.damn.day and you'll find me. And I will see you next week when we tackle our final film of our first category, films that make people scream at me. And our final film of this category is The Godfather. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be tackling The Godfather. Many a dates have been ruined because of this movie. So if you would like to watch The Godfather before the episode, you can find The Godfather on Paramount Plus, YouTube with a premium subscription, Amazon Prime, Google Play. You can rent it there, and you can also rent it at Fandango as well. So go watch it. It is worth the watch. And then, I'll see you next Monday when we talk about The Godfather. All right, my lovelies, that's all for me today. I love you very much. Drink your water and goodbye.